And now, the Phil Hendry Show with Phil Hendry. West of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. East of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. First-time callers, dial 1-800-449-8686. And the wildcard line is 1-800-449-8686. And now, here's Phil Hendry.
Doug Danger is joining us from the Orange County Courier. Doug is an entertainment writer for the Courier. And I want to ask you, Doug, I know you're going to be doing a feature on the Great Smokeout, the cigarette smoking, the American Cancer Society day that that's been going on for a lot of years, right?
Phil, the Great Smokeout is over 20 years old. And I have been wanting, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I've been wanting for a long time to write about our society's trend toward reckless behavior. And our society's trend toward risk-taking among the American people, really walking out on the edge. And that's really what my article on Sunday is going to be all about.
All right, but this is about this article has to do with the Great American Smokeout?
That is correct. And let's talk about this thing, the Great American Smokeout, which is an effort on the part of the American Cancer Society to get people to quit smoking. And it's an admirable goal. It still is an individual choice to pursue an activity that's not prohibited by the laws of our country. Smoking may not be healthy, but we certainly have the right to smoke, and we have restricted smoking areas, and we've not outlawed smoking. Now, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I wanted to take a look at the Great Smokeout and how it's another American tradition that encourages people to engage in dangerous behavior. And so what we're...
No, hold on. The Great American Smokeout does, not the smoking? Because I would think that it was the smoking that's the...
The smoking is, of course, dangerous, but the Great American Smokeout is a tradition trying to get people to smoke that I think is every bit as dangerous, reckless, and cavalier in a way. And I'll tell you what, I'm a gay man and I'm a gay journalist. I've been out since September and I smoke cigarettes. And I want to say that as a gay man and a gay journalist, I do smoke cigarettes. And for the piece that I'm writing on the Great Smokeout, what I'm going to do is go into areas where there are a lot of people, but where smoking is not prohibited, where you can technically smoke. That could be at a baseball stadium, maybe a football stadium, out in the mall someplace. And that could be just about any public place, really. And I'll light up a cigarette.
Now, are you trying to get some reaction?
Not so much trying to get a reaction as see if there will be a reaction. See, I'm looking to see who will come up to me, if any. And this is what I mean when I say reckless behavior. And actually tell me to put the cigarette out or make some comment negatively about my smoking. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I want to see how deep this risk-taking behavior and dangerous behavior runs.
In telling someone that you don't like their smoking or commenting on their smoking, how is that risk-taking, particularly with the fact that you are very vocal as being an out... gay man and journalist.
Well, as I told you, I'm a gay man, I'm a gay journalist. I go into a situation like that, I light up a cigarette, I wait to see if someone is actually going to have the temerity to walk up to me and ask me to put it out or make some comment. That's going to be interesting.
Because it'll take what? As we say, some cojones? Or?
Well, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I would like you to go... Here's what I would like to say. They'd say, I'd like you to put that cigarette out. And then I would say to them, okay, and I'm gay, now what do you think about my smoking? See, I understand you don't like my smoking, but I want to tell you that I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Now what do you think about my smoking? And then I'll see if they will persist in their comments. Because once I say, you don't like me smoking, well, I'm gay. Now what do you think about it? See, there's a little bit of an intimidation. I wonder if they'll persist in their comments.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. Why is there intimidation based upon you being gay?
Well, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so someone comes up to me and says, would you put that cigarette out, or I don't like you smoking, or it's bad for you, and in other words, coming up to a total stranger, not knowing anything about him, and making this comment, when I then say, yeah, well, I'm gay, now what do you think? They're gonna think twice. I mean, I don't know. I would like to see who has the guts to tell me to put it out once I tell them I'm gay.
All right, Doug Danger joins us from the Orange County Courier, our number 1-800-449-8686. Today is the Great American Smokeout. The American Cancer Society has been conducting this promotion, if you will, for a number of years to get people to quit smoking. Have you ever thought about, and Doug Danger joins me, and I want to ask you a little bit about your cigarette smoking, Doug. You are an out gay man. As part of your article that you're going to be writing about the Great American Smokeout, you're going to be out there smoking a cigarette somewhere in public, and you're going to see if someone comes up to you and tells you to put it out. You call this an investigation or study into the risk-taking of the American people.
That is correct.
Because it's a risk?
Well, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, you see...
Well, why is it intimidating, or why do you imagine that it would be intimidating? Let me give our phone number, too, Doug, forgive me. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Why is it intimidating, or why do you imagine that it would be intimidating for someone to come up to a gay person and tell them to put their cigarette out, or tell them they don't like their smoking?
Well, let me just back up. I'm a gay man. I'm a gay journalist. Since I came out in late September, I've walked a long and very arduous road. I mean, dealing with discrimination, dealing with hate speech, dealing with attempts at bashing, dealing with bigotry. This is a road that I've walked as a gay man, as a gay journalist. Am I really going to take seriously somebody who acts recklessly and without any regard to their own well-being? They walk up to me and ask me to put my cigarette out. Now, it's this kind of risk-taking that I want to document as a gay man and as a gay journalist. We're a society, Phil, that for some reason wants to live on the edge more and more. And let's see how far out on the edge people want to go. How far into the dangerous unknown do people want to go to walk up to me, a gay man and a gay journalist, and tell me to put my cigarette out? I mean, that to me is going to be a very fascinating exercise.
To say that, you make a good point when you say as a gay person you have had to deal with bigotry and you've had to deal with hate speech, and I suppose it does toughen one up. The thing that interests me is you say someone coming up to you and asking you to put your cigarette out or making a comment on your cigarette smoking is reckless.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or risk-taking behavior.
That is true.
I mean, you make it sound almost as if it's extreme sports, you know?
Well, I wouldn't call it extreme sweat. I suppose they want to make that a sport, you know, tell someone to put their cigarette out. But
you're saying, who has the guts?
Well, it is reckless. You walk up to a gay man and a gay, you walk up to me, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, you tell me to put my cigarette out, you're rolling the dice. You are taking a risk that I wonder you would take if you knew what the possible consequences were.
And well, what would be the consequences of telling you to put your cigarette out?
Look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and to tell me, put my cigarette out, I'm going to say to that person, all right, because this, again, is part of the article that I'm writing for the Sunday feature. Okay, you want me to put my cigarette out, and let's say they say...
Let me role play with you, could I?
I'm sorry, Phil?
Let me role play. I'll be the person coming up to you and asking you to put the cigarette out.
All right, for what I would say to you...
No, let me just really... Let's really role-play this, if I could. You're out in a mall. Let's say you're down there at the Fashion Square or the Fashion Island in Newport Beach.
All right.
And you're smoking a cigarette somewhere in a public area near the Hard Rock Cafe, and I walk over and I say, excuse me, sir, I'm with my children. Would you put that cigarette out?
All right, and I would say to you... I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Now, do you want me to put it out?
And I'd say to you, I still would like you to put it out. Yes, sir, if you don't mind.
At that point, then, I've got to kind of reach down inside of me, Phil.
But can you tell me what you'd say to me?
What I would say to you, if you said to me, put the cigarette out, and then I'd say to you, all right, I'm gay. Now what do you think about smoking? And you say, you still want me to put it out?
Yeah.
I think that's... So that's an example, and I would write about it. That's an example of some real risk-taking. To tell me to put my cigarette out...
Well, how's it a risk? I mean, in other words, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? And I've taken a lot as a gay person. Bashing, bigotry, hate speech, discrimination, name-calling. So I've been through a lot. And you want to challenge me on my smoking... I honestly doubt seriously if you would say to me, yeah, I still want you to put it out.
Well, as a journalist, though, you're going to document that, right?
That is correct.
So as a journalist, if I come up to you and I say, I'd like you to put your cigarette out, and you say, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I'm not, now what do you think of my smoking? I say, I'd still like you to put it out.
I'm going to document that you go into a category of people who are a little risky. And forgive me, Phil, I don't have to say it. It's a little bit stupid.
You call that stupid behavior?
I call it very stupid behavior. You say to me, you put the cigarette out, I go, yeah, I'm gay. Now what do you think about it? You go, well, I still like to put it out. Buddy, you're asking for it.
All right, maybe I'm not getting you clearly or whatever. I'm talking with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. Doug is He is the entertainment writer for the Courier. Today's the Great American Smokeout, and as part of this article, and I know you talked to him, Chris, earlier, he's going to go out to a public place, light a cigarette, and see who has the, quote, and I'm quoting him, the temerity to come up to him, a gay man and a gay journalist, and tell him to put the cigarette out. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. It's a one of those iffy areas, you know, where smoking is prohibited, but or smoking is looked down upon, and yet it is still legal. And so we do have a society where we feel free to comment on people smoking. Mr. Danger seems to be indicating that he is an out gay man and an out gay journalist, and you are risk-taking or engaging in reckless behavior by walking up to him and telling him to put his cigarette out. 1-800-449-8686. The world-famous Phil Henry Show will be right back.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
I would rather put my eyes out with a stick from a tree than look at you.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
Back with me is Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. Doug is writing an article for the Sunday Courier. It's a feature on the Great Smokeout. And the, I guess what you're saying, the risky behavior of people who walk up to individuals they don't know and ask them to put their cigarette out?
The individuals they don't know, Phil. And also, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, it takes on a different dimension. Because I'm gay, someone walks up to me and tells me to put my cigarette out, I'll say to them, I happen to be gay. Now, do you want me to put it out? Now, if they want to push it, as you said, he said, yes, I still want you to put it out. I would like them, I'd love to see somebody look me directly in my eye, because I am gay, and insist I put that cigarette out. Because once I make eye contact, once I lock eyes with them and I tell them, I'm gay, you still want me to put this out? And I make eye contact, and I mean eyeball to eyeball, I'm going to find it very, very difficult to believe someone's going to insist that I put that cigarette out. But this is not really about me putting out my cigarette. This is about why would anyone want to take, you know, what's the word we like to use, their cojones in their hands, and walk up to me and tell me to put my cigarette out. That's fascinating to me.
Because you're a gay man and a gay journalist.
Well, I've been out, Phil, since late September, walking the road that all gay people walk. And it's a tough road. And, you know, they say walk a mile in a man's shoes, and you've just walked a mile away with some other guy's shoes, you know. But in all seriousness, what you're doing is...
I haven't heard that before. That's very funny.
No, but seriously, in all seriousness, what you're doing is you are engaging in public behavior that could be risky.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. I'm going to go to Angie, take some phone calls for Doug Danger. Angie, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
And
hi.
You need to turn your radio down, Angie, okay?
I'm turning it down.
Go ahead, ma'am. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, are you the host? Or
I'm the host,
TV?
Yeah.
Yes, hi. I'd like to say that my brother is gay, and I don't think that he ever would rub this into my face, that anyone in the world should feel intimidated just by walking up to him and say, hey, can you please put your cigarette out?
Right.
I don't think it has anything to do with being gay.
Ma'am, this is Doug Danger. How are you?
I'm fine.
And
How are you?
Your name is Angie, right?
Yes.
Angie, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Yes, I said it 17 times. I counted.
Well,
and don't get me wrong.
Because you
have
a gay brother.
Nothing against gay.
Right, you have nothing against gay people, and yet you got a little homophobic there, and I want to know why that is.
How did she get homophobic?
Well, she says I don't want it rubbed in her face. Believe I got nothing I would want to rub in your face, Angie, for a lot of different reasons. But what I'm trying to say is this.
Okay.
I'm gay.
Yes.
You walk up to me and ask me to put my cigarette out?
Okay.
I mean, where, as we like to say around the old body shop, where do you get your, you know what's big enough to walk up to me, a gay man and a gay journalist?
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
I think what we're all having a problem with here, Doug, is why does it take such guts?
Okay, that is two different things. We are talking about...
Angie, would you walk up to me? Would you go eyeball to eyeball with me? I mean, get your eye right up to mine and say, put your cigarette out? I don't think so.
Okay, this is a different thing that we are talking about. once we're talking about your being gay, and how dare you, how dare I go to you and say it to you. The
yes,
other
ma'am.
Thing you're talking about is going anyone to anybody and saying, can you please put your cigarette out? That's two different things.
Well, the article I'm writing, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so I'm doing it from my standpoint.
Okay, that's the 19th time.
Would you walk up to me, go eyeball to eyeball with me, and tell me to put my cigarette out? I don't think so. But I'd like to meet the guy that would.
But it has nothing to do with you being gay. It has something...
What's wrong with me being gay? Now, you
nothing.
Said you got a gay... Well, there's a little bit of homophobia going on there.
And the lady's not homophobic.
Well, she sounds like she's got a problem with my being gay, and I want to get to
no.
the root of that.
Oh, come on.
Are you Latin? You sound as if you're from a Latin culture.
Listen, I
think... And your brother is a Latin gay man. That's not an unusual
no,
thing to be.
No, absolutely not.
You know?
Latin. I'm not a Latino. I'm a white female.
All right. Well,
and
being
what
gay,
I'm saying is
part of what I am.
Finish?
And I'm gay.
Yeah, but would you let me finish?
But when
I'm getting this feeling.
You know I'm gay, right?
She knows that, yes.
Okay.
All right, look,
let
Angie, let's very quickly, then I got to move on to another call.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is that this gentleman
gay.
Has two different issues.
And I'm gay,
one
man.
Issue is that he's being gay. That has nothing to do with anybody having the guts
well,
walking
like saying,
to anyone, gay or not gay,
have you got the
and
guts to come up to me, a gay man, and say, put your cigarette out, is all I'm saying. It's like saying, do I have the guts to come up to you, a Mexican, and say, you know, put your
but
cigarette out.
But I'm not
out.
A Mexican. Stop
well,
saying that.
I don't know. Is there something wrong with being Mexican?
What?
All right, look, Angie, never mind. Why'd you ask her that?
Well, I thought she was Mexican.
No, she may be French, for all I know.
Well, I misspoke, and I don't know why she was so put out by that.
All right, anyway, 1-800-449-8686. Lauren, hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Doug Danger. Lauren?
Oh, hi.
Go
sorry
ahead,
about
ma'am.
That.
No problem.
Well, just listening to this guy, if someone walks up to you and says, sir, can you please put your cigarette out? I mean, it shouldn't
yes.
be risky behavior. It should just be a question. And when you say, I'm gay, I mean...
I am gay.
I just don't understand.
No, here's
I know.
Let's
I know, and I just don't understand why that would have any effect.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to be viewed differently for
well, here,
being
here's
gay?
What I'm saying. Well, here, Mr. Henry did this. I thought this was very helpful. Let's say I'm smoking a cigarette, and I don't know where you are, Lauren, but let's say I'm in a public place. Come up to me now. You tell me to put my cigarette out. Go ahead. Just say it to me as if you see me smoking a cigarette.
Sir, will you please put your cigarette out?
I'm gay. Now, do you want me to put it out?
So that actually has nothing to do with why I asked you to put your cigarette out. So,
well,
yes, I would like you to keep it out. But you know what? Honestly, I agree with the fact
really
that you shouldn't just...
Well, wait
if
a minute.
It's a public place...
You didn't say... Lauren, you didn't hear him say you're really asking for it.
Well, I didn't...
Well, that's what you said. When she said, I'd still like you to put it out, you're asking for it.
Look,
well, your aggression is your own problem,
if
sir.
I go,
it's not someone asking you to... If you're making, like... Honestly, I don't think that if you're in a public place, sir,
yes,
just listen for a second.
Yes,
I mean,
ma'am.
If you're in a public place, I don't think that you really have the right to go up to someone and say, can you put your cigarette out? You
well,
can move
point.
Along.
That's the point, yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, it seems you're making the point your sexuality, which is really nothing. I mean, I have a lot of gay friends, and I think it's a little offensive that you want to make it such a big deal
ma'am,
that I should be intimidated.
Well, I'm an out gay man. I'm an out gay journalist. And I'd love to meet the guy that comes up to me, goes eyeball to eyeball with me now. I'm talking about, would you do that? Would you go right up to my eyeball and say, put it out? I don't think so.
What do you mean eyeball to eyeball?
I mean, come up nose to nose and say, put it out after I tell you I'm gay.
Okay, sir. Well, what if somebody went up to you there in that baseball stadium and they're sitting next to you and they say, sir, can you please put your cigarette out? And you say, I'm gay. And if it's a woman, what if she goes, well, I'm pregnant and I'm sitting next to you, so could you please put that out? I mean,
that's not the
what,
point.
Is that a risk?
That's not the point. She's pregnant or not. Go
well, it's not
eyelash,
the point if you're
I mean,
gay or not.
You're brushing
is someone else
eyelashes.
Being comfortable with your smoke?
But if you're brushing eyelashes with me and you can look me in the eye and say, put it out, knowing I'm gay, we've got ourselves a situation.
Why is it a
all right,
situation?
Okay.
Why
Lauren,
is it
I got to take a break here. 1-800-449-8686. Doug Danger with me on the Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I'm gonna lie with me. me is Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. He's the feature writer there. Of course, he's the entertainment writer. We are talking about the Great American Smokeout, which is, I guess we're a day late and a dollar short on this thing, Doug, but you are mentioning cigarette smoking being bad for you.
Absolutely, Phil. I would not in any way, shape, or form want this to come across as if I'm encouraging cigarette smoking. What I'm saying is I'm a cigarette smoker. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I also smoke cigarettes. Now, if you want to walk up to me in a public place where smoking is legal...
I understand. It's a public place where there are no signs prohibiting it.
That is correct. And go eyeball to eyeball with me and say, I want you to put that out. And I'm saying go eyeball to eyeball. In other words, look me in my eye. Because as a gay man and a gay journalist, I've developed, as all gay people do, a sense... You know how they say that deaf people can hear better? Gay people see in terms of our sensibility. Some people call it homo eye, gay eye, whatever you want to call it, but I can look with the gay eye and see whether or not you're serious. And I'd love to see it happen. I'd love it.
That sounds threatening.
What does?
What you just said there. I'd love it.
No, I'm just saying. I would be very curious.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. This is Stefania. Stefania, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
You know, I'm only 5 feet tall, but I would love to go eye to eye with you and ask you to put out your cigarette, regardless of, you know.
You want to go eyeball to eyeball with me, even though it's legal to smoke a cigarette where I'm smoking it? I'm gay.
Well, I mean,
you're aware that I'm gay?
That's not even the point. I mean, I approach you, and I'm not going to judge you by anything.
Can you acknowledge, though, that I'm
not going to judge you by what you're wearing, by what you're saying, by what anything. Here, if you have a cigarette in your hand.
Hold up. I'm sorry. Hold on.
You can't take calls, or Doug.
Hold up, yeah, I'm on the read. That's interesting. That was a call, Stephanie and Phil. You might be interested. That's just some people calling me and saying, "You go, man." They're hearing me on the air. They're hearing what I'm saying.
Are they other gay people?
No, just regular people who read my column.
Okay, what you're saying is that you would love to have someone go eye to eye with you.
Yeah, but
and I'm saying I would love it even. I'm standing next to you. I'm only going to judge you by the fact that you have a cigarette in your hand.
I'm sitting there. I'm smoking a cigarette. It's not prohibited. And you're going to go eyeball to eyeball with me and you're 5 foot tall?
Yeah.
How's sure. that going to happen? What, are you going to go get a soap crate somewhere?
I mean, if you turn around and say to me I'm gay and I'm a gay journalist, I say, congratulations, can you put your cigarette out?
Wait a minute.
It doesn't
have I'm 5'10". If you're only 5 foot, how do you go eyeball to eyeball? I really want to know.
Well, I look up and you look down.
Not eyeball. I'm not going to crouch down and get my eyeball up against yours.
I mean, but that's what you
see,
said. You said you'd love it. And I'm offering it to you.
You're doing something very risky, and you're laughing about it.
But see, that's the lovely part of this country, is that I can speak to anyone that I want to.
Would you turn the phone off, Doug?
Hold on, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, they have much, much more modern rings.
What I would say, Stephanie, is this. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Wonderful.
I don't know whether you've got a problem with gay people or not.
Absolutely
sounds
not.
Sounds to me
no.
like you do. No, it sounds like you do.
No,
and I would look
no.
into that situation. I'm smoking a cigarette. And someone comes up to me and says, put it out. And I say, I'm gay. Now what do you think about it? Nine times out of ten, they're going to back off.
Okay. So here's the thing. You're saying that I'm, by approaching you.
Turn the phone off, Doug. Honest.
I didn't know you could hear that. I'm sorry.
So by approaching you, I've stepped on your toes because you're gay and you're a gay journalist. But just a few minutes ago, you were judging a caller, calling her Latino, and she wasn't even Latino. And
well,
you
she had an accent, didn't she?
Yeah, but you were totally wrong.
It's totally logical to think she's a Mexican. What's wrong with that?
No.
What's
wrong
with that?
You assume. Which is why I'm not going to assume anything about you.
She's
just
born.
Go by what I
see.
And
born.
What I'm going to see is that you're smoking. I'm not going to see anything else beyond the fact that you're smoking.
But then I'm going to tell you I'm gay and I'm a gay journalist and you got to back up.
Wonderful.
All right, Stephanie, I got to take a break. Hold up. Thank you. 1-800-449-866. So the minute you say you're gay and that you're a gay journalist...
I'm sorry, but a lot of people are calling in. They're loving what I'm saying. They're calling my cell phone, and they're...
Please turn it off, Doug, because it's an intrusion on what we're trying to do.
I apologize. But I'm trying to let people know I'm gay. You want to walk up to me and tell me to put my cigarette out? I'd love it.
You'd love it. It sounds like you want to get into some kind of... You want to start some stuff, man.
No, I don't want to start anything. I'm simply saying, you've got to understand, as a gay man and as a gay journalist, what I've been through.
All right, here is Donna. Donna, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hello.
Yes, Donna, how you doing?
I'm fine. I was just driving home, and I'll tell you what, I am, first of all, I'm confused here. Can you not be respectful and turn the phone off? He's asking
several times. My phone is. I'm a reporter.
I mean, you're
a journalist.
You're a gay journalist.
I'm a gay journalist.
Can't you listen?
I keep the phone on because you never know when someone is calling me from the assignment desk
or
I've got a deadline to meet.
It's rude. He's asked you to turn it off.
I'm working. I don't know what you're doing.
I am 5'3", and I would be more than happy to look you. I'll stand on the table and look you in the eye and tell
you
please figure it out.
Donnie, you ever heard the term telephone cowboy? You ever heard that term? Because that's what you're
saying.
I think the whole issue here is you are
struggling with the fact that you're gay.
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. How could I have an issue with it when I'm proud to say I'm a gay man and a gay journalist? I've got gay eyes.
Why are you making that the issue?
What's wrong with the fact of me looking at you with the gay eye?
Let the lady finish, okay?
Fine, go ahead.
Let me talk.
Go ahead.
I'm the one calling in here.
Is the lady going to say anything, Phil?
Yeah, I'd like to, but the phone's interrupted me.
Don't forget my phone and say what you got to say. My phone's my business.
I am 5'3". I will be more
than
happy.
You said that already. You don't like me saying I'm gay, but you said you're 5'3" about 18 times now.
Are you going to let me talk?
If I hear anything, I'll let you know.
You're asking everyone. You'd love to see someone do it. I'd be happy to do it. I'm 5'3". I'll look in the eye and I'll say, please put out your cigarette.
All right, and then I'll look
at
you.
Then I will
look at you with gay eye and say no.
Nothing to do with you being gay.
Absolutely
nothing.
Yes, it does, because you're going to look at me after you say that. Then I'm looking at you with gay eye.
Cares about your gay eye? Who cares about
you would
gay?
Because at the minute I say no, I'm not going to put it out, you back off.
All right. So now what we're saying here, Doug, just so I know. The lady's come up to you. She said, would you put the cigarette out? You say, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. No, I won't. She says, I would still like you to put it out. Then you say, you go eyeball to eyeball with a gay eye and say, I'm still not going to put it out, and she'll back off.
Absolutely.
No, I will not.
Oh, yes, you
bring
will.
It on.
Bring on what? You know, what
bring
are you gonna
it
do?
On.
What are you going to do? Are you going to grab the cigarette and put it out?
I'll take the cigarette
get your husband?
And stomp it out. Yeah,
ma'am, you
if
know as well as you know as well as I
on,
do.
You I don't
wish...
care if you're gay. I don't care if your gay partner's with you,
ma'am. I don't care if your husband's with you. I'll tell you this
well,
right now.
Well, that's
you
where
wish...
I come in.
Yes,
well, here he is, right
really
here. Okay. Now look,
right
look. Whatever your name is, what's your name there, cowboy?
Jeff, don't say anything because you're not allowed to be on. It's between me and him.
Not allowed to be on. What's he on? Work release. I'll tell you what right now, you wish you didn't say that after you get a glare from your homo eye.
Oh, please.
Yeah. I got to take this call. I'd rather take this call and talk to you.
Yeah, because I'm standing up against you.
No, you're just some midget who thinks she's going to go eyeball to eyeball with the homo eye. Ain't going to happen.
Wait a minute. Your name's calling me, but if I call you a faggot, what's that going to do?
Oh, look at that. I didn't say anything that's racial or I didn't
you
say
called
it.
Me a
you
midget?
Called me a faggot? You know what I think
did
I'd love?
Did you call me a midget?
You know what? If I wasn't such a humanitarian...
Did you call me
if
a midget?
I wasn't such a humanitarian, I'd kick your teeth right out of your head right in
Bring
front of your
on.
Husband.
Did you call me
I'd
a midget?
Forget it. Hello?
You called me a midget.
All right, I dare say, Donna, that isn't quite as hateful as faggot.
Yeah, well, she don't get
why
that.
Why not?
I tell you what, you bring your husband over, I'll kick his teeth out, too, then I'll have you cook me breakfast. How about that? Yeah, is this the animal shelter?
Will you get off that phone? Thank you very much. 1-800-449-8686. What do you mean, the animal shelter?
I'm nothing.
Here is Billy. Billy, go ahead.
You know, I'm going to tell you something, pal. You know what? I'll look you in the eyeball. I don't care if you're gay or if you're not gay. Hey, you're very disrespectful for woman. I'm a man.
I'm smoking a cigarette. I got to smoke a cigarette, okay? It's not illegal to smoke a cigarette in a public place.
I don't care.
Where it's not
I'm not
prohibited.
Saying that.
All right?
I'm not saying that. You're over here talking to women. I'm a man. I weigh 265 pounds, and I'll bust you right in the damn mouth.
All right.
How's that?
Okay, so you're 265 pounds of donut oil. Good for you.
You think I'm doing it all? I think I'm throwing it off.
You sound like a long, cool drink of water to me, buddy.
Well, now, here's what I'm...
All right, gentlemen.
No, wait, here's the thing. I'm smoking a cigarette in a perfectly legal place. Up comes Cowboy Billy here, and he says to me, put it out. I say, hey, I'm gay. You going to tell me to put it out now? And he says, yeah. And then I say,
I don't care if you're gay.
Eyeball to eyeball with me, man. He'll back off.
I don't care if you're... What's it got to do with you being gay?
You know what, I can hear...
You know what you are? You're hiding. You're like all these other people want to hide behind
sexuality. Hey, look.
And we're all supposed to back off.
Hey, look. Yeah, you telling me that you don't have a crueler lodged in your throat right now, man? I can hear a glazed donut lodged in your esophagus.
What?
All right.
Look, I'm gay.
You something.
Are you know I'm gay?
I don't care if you're gay or not.
But do you know I'm gay?
My wife's pregnant, and if my wife's pregnant and you're smoking a cigarette... What the hell are you doing, taking phone calls on a talk show?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a little conversation going here instead of being yelled at here by Cowboy Billy and his pregnant wife. And what you doing bringing another kid into the world anyway before you can hardly afford the ones you got? Now, the thing...
Hold on for a minute. All of this is... All of this is personal stuff, okay?
You don't know me. You don't know me, number one.
How's your wife going to get pregnant with her belly in the way?
Well, let me ask you a question, jerk. What,
yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you what. You know what? I'm glad you're gay. You know why? Because you can't
turn off the phone, will you?
Species.
What?
You can't perpetuate your species. In other words, I'm glad you're gay because you can't have any kids that's going to act like kids.
And it's too bad. We might be able to bring some bright people into this world instead of just one more kid's going to be sailing chain-link fence for a living.
You are.
I'm trying to.
You,
are,
you know what?
I'll tell you what. I've listened to a lot of talk shows in my life, but I've never been so mad to call one up like this.
Oh, bullcrap. You'll get over it, man.
You know what? Told a lady before me, you're going to kick her teeth in.
Hey, she comes up to me. She comes up to me and calls me a faggot. I'll kick her ass around the block for drill and her husband, too. Then I'll knock down the back door, kick her Doberman pincher in the teeth, and have her cook me an omelet.
Well, calm down. You're going to spit up your donuts. You're a big man on the phone,
okay,
brother.
Guys.
I can tell you're one of those big men on the phone, but face to face with your little homo eyes.
Hey, dude.
If I walked up to you, I guarantee you'd put that cigarette out.
Hey, let me tell you what.
Stuff it up your nose.
Hey, you know what? That's big talk. But I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I got the gay eye. You want to look me in the gay eye?
I'll poke your damn gay eye out.
All right, look at that. Guys, you know what this is? This is nothing more than a fist fight, okay? This is a bar fight you guys are engaged in.
This guy said to me.
He's got no respect for people.
What are you talking about? This lady called me faggot? Are you kidding me, man? I would kick her ass.
Let me ask you something. If the shoe fits, wear it.
Hey, tell me if the shoe fits here. Now, let me ask you something. The first sexual experience you had, was with it a heifer or was it a goat?
I'm not even going to dignify that remark.
Look, man, I'm sorry if I'm insulting your girlfriends, okay? But
it's not my girlfriend. It's my wife, you idiot.
That's the first sexual experience you had.
And what are you doing it with? You must be doing it with a dog.
Not a dog, a human being. Okay, look at man. Cows are for milking and making steaks out of, not for making love to.
You know what?
I wish to God you come to Alabama and you come put blow smoke in my face and find out what's going
to
happen.
Now, why would I want to come to Alabama other than
to Atlanta?
All right.
You're right, we don't want you here. You're probably in damn San Francisco where you belong.
No, I'm in Los Angeles, okay? The only reason why I go through Alabama is to get to Miami.
Well, yeah, you know what? Go around, my friend. Go around. Go by the panties.
All right, okay, guys.
Hey, look, I'll look with the gay eye.
Bug off with the gay freaking eye. We're going to be... Will you turn that phone off? They got a little bit more contentious than I wanted it to. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Danger's writing his article for the Courier. It'll be out on Sunday about cigarette smoking and how walking up to him, a gay man and a gay journalist, and telling him to put it out takes some real cojones. 1-800-449-8686. You can email Doug Danger at Doug Danger, and the last name is spelled D-A-N-N-G-E-R at PhilHenryShow.com. That's Doug Danger, D-A-N-N-G-E-R at PhilHenryShow.com. My apologies to those of you who were on the phone waiting to get on. The Phil Henry Show later on tonight. We've got Clara Bingham will be talking about coming up on our show tomorrow night, but we'll also have a flashback from Bobby Dooley. We've also got Phil on remote. I'll be out at Highland and Hollywood Boulevard later on tonight. And what about Lawn Jockey Anonymous? You heard of this organization? These are people who really miss their lawn jockeys. We'll be talking with them tonight on The Phil Henry Show.
1-800-449-8686. The world famous Phil Henry Show. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Justin McElroy was on our show last night. He is a 17-year-old junior from Canyon High School. He wants Sadie Hawkins Day eliminated. He says young men today are already pressured enough by older women who are coming onto them. Here's
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
I am a 50-year-old woman. I'm a psychologist. I deal with individuals and marriage and family issues.
Yeah.
And what I want to tell you is I have a 15-year-old son and I have a 12-year-old daughter. And what I want to say to you sincerely is what you have shared over this line tonight. You have some serious issues that I'm just
you
saying.
You sound like the doctor that my parents sent me to like 2 years ago. You know, you have really serious issues.
But hey, let me tell you
something. I don't have no serious issues.
You
my
have some serious issues, and I'm not saying your mother and her friends don't. But with what you're conveying over this line and your anger.
You think I need medication or something? Maybe you could give me some drugs.
Okay, look,
your anger
have a little respect.
And your attitude about women, you are going to be in deep trouble if you don't get some help.
Oh, okay. So in other words, I'm like a rapist. I'm a potential rapist or something? Is that what you're trying to say?
Did I say that?
Yeah, that's basically what you're saying. And also,
you know what?
I'm sorry.
Don't care.
I'm sorry if I'm saying that like women in their 50s are kind of skanky, but that's just where, you know, it's at. And I don't like the fact that my friends and I have to sit there and go, oh, yeah, this is Russell.
Well, what does that have to do with Sadie Hawkins Day? What does that have to do with women that are your age?
They're beasts in training.
What do you mean, beasts in training?
The girls at our high school who are being told, go ask these guys to dance, they are beasts in lycra pants in training.
Well, what does that mean, beast in a lycra pants? Is that your mother and her friends?
Well, yes, sir.
Do you not think that you have a serious issue about women?
No, I like women. I just don't like the idea that
there
I gotta,
is not one thing that you've said that sounds like you like women. It sounds like you are so pissed off.
Well, what do you want to charge me $150 for that or something? I mean,
no,
I'm saying
if you care about having a relationship in this life, you need to go get some serious
help. Wait a minute.
Help.
If I want to have a relationship with a woman like you, but suppose I want to have a relationship with a woman who understands me. Okay, yeah. How do you like me now?
Well, listen,
how
I must
like
not be
now,
that
man?
Bad.
Okay.
I must not be that bad because I have a 15-year-old son who is an incredible young man.
That's
and he's
what,
got a healthy attitude about women.
Okay,
are you
aware
so
of the fact
cute.
That any kid that is that separated from his shadow has got some serious problems? If your kid's acting all happy to you...
What do you mean separated from his shadow? What, are you doing some psychology?
I took some psychology at a community college last summer, yeah.
So what are you saying about this woman's son? He's separated from his shadow?
Yeah, he's acting all nice.
All I have to say
he's acting
is,
all
I,
nice
I
to her, and the meanwhile, he's probably out shooting dogs and stuff for all she knows.
Let me tell you something. Your rage can turn into something very dangerous.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go out.
All I want to say is I'm glad that my daughter is not around.
Well, I got pictures of little kids. Do you want to turn me in?
Hey, your smart-ass attitude is not helping this furthering your cause at all.
No, but I just hope to God that you don't go out and hurt some woman, because the race that you have, you are very capable of it.
Oh, you're probably looking for it all the time. Hey, you better check your son's drawer, by the way. He's probably got a big baggie of some strawberry cushion there.
You are so sick. Do you not realize that?
Okay, Doc. Hey, when you get your doctor's degree, could you, like, call me until then?
Well, you know what? If you don't want to go up for some rape or injuring some woman,
okay,
first, you really need to get some help.
Hey, kid. You're being disrespectful now to somebody who's older than you. Do you understand that?
She's coming on like Miss Cleo.
Do you understand that?
Yes,
Jason,
sir.
I am serious with you.
My name's Justin.
If you don't want to hurt some woman and be sent to jail for life, you better get some help.
Okay, Dr. Laura.
Bill Henry Show.
Comedy Gold.
Now, Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Coming up tonight, we've got Jeff Dowder's Hypothetical America, and that's an interesting feature. Jeff Dowder joins us. He's a professor of mechanical physics from Caltech University, and he talks about what America would be like if we didn't have something that we now have, and he will discuss tonight that with us, a specific thing that we may not have. We will also have later on a little trip out onto Hollywood and Highland here in Southern California to see what's happening. That's an area that's been, I guess, what would you call it, Chris, refurbished or something?
Refurbished and major tourist attraction.
Yeah, very, very friendly to the tourists who come to town and want to go see Hollywood. And there's a walkway there, and there's a shop and everything, and it's always attracting a lot of people. And also we have Lawn Jockey Anonymous and Marital Bliss coming up.
And what's that about?
It's about, I don't want to tell you what it's about.
I don't know what maritable means.
Marital, I misspoke. I meant to say marital, not maritable.
All right.
Thanks very much, Mr. Producer.
Well, I have to get all huffy about it.
Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Don't forget, The Phil Henry Show has a website, www.philhenryshow.com. Our Best of Phil Henry Show CD is available. The Best of the 2004 CD called Fahrenheit 7-11 is available on our website. All the money goes to My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood, California. And we're very proud to say that, we don't take any bread for that. All of it goes to those very fine, fine people there. Now we have more stories here about broadcasting. Just a very quick trip around the news. I wanted to, just give you another update from the world, the marvelous world of broadcasting, what's going on this week. Broadcasters are, afraid to put anything on the air now. We're reaching sort of a critical mass with what's going to be going on the air on television and radio, because now everybody is running scared for fear they're going to get fined. And there was a mention that ABC had some sort of partial nudity on the intro to Monday Night Football on Monday night, and they were worried about the FCC there. The FCC hadn't said anything about it. Michael Powell made some public comments, but they haven't fined anybody. However, the reason why I'm bringing this up is here, there's a guy here, and it took a professor of popular culture at Syracuse to say what I've been saying here for the last 3 months. Now, I happen to be in broadcasting, so naturally no one's going to listen to me. But if a professor of popular culture at Syracuse says it, maybe they will. And so I'm grateful to Robert Thompson, who said, and let me quote, he said this about broadcasters, and here's the simplest, this is the statement. They have to defend themselves if they want to be able to broadcast things that are for audiences other than toddlers. He said, one of the simplest things one could say, I pointed this out, they have to start defending themselves. They have to start speaking up and saying, excuse me, I'm going to air a little segment here on Monday Night Football, and it's going to have a woman naked from the waist up, from the back, not from the front. And if you don't like it, why don't you fine me, and then what I'll do is take you to court. And I'll sue you. And what happens then is this. We sue based upon the legality of the law that says we can't broadcast thus and so. And then you'll say, well, it's the law. And we'll say, yes, but the law is unconstitutional. And you'll say, no, it's not. Yes, it is. And then guess what? It goes out on appeal, and it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, where the broadcasters say to the Supreme Court, sirs, ladies and sirs, the Federal Communications Commission, in violation of the Constitution of the United States, is regulating speech. This is not why the FCC was originally chartered in 1934. The Federal Communications Act, which I had to study about before I became a broadcaster, the Federal Communications Act of 1934, says nothing about regulating speech. It's about regulating frequency and the technical matters of broadcasting. The FCC has unconstitutionally been empowered with regulating speech since then. Now, why do they still get away with it? Because nobody's challenged them. Legally. Now, I'm a parent, and I don't want indecent broadcasting. Fair enough. Then what we will have to do is somehow constitutionally empower the FCC to regulate speech. But all that's going to do is, what are you looking at me like that for, bud?
This is so boring. No one cares.
But I care, okay, bud? I care.
Yeah, but I don't understand about constitutional and everything.
Well, you're an idiot. That's why you don't get it. I care, okay?
So what if you care? No one cares what you care. They only care about what me care.
What do you mean they only care about what me care?
Because I represent the average guy.
Yeah, uh-huh. The average guy with a plate in his head. All right, fine.
No, no, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to. I won't say anything more about it. I just wanted it.
No, go ahead.
No, forget it.
I'm just an average Joe. I just want to have some giggles.
Great, dude. I got the copy of FHM here, okay? You want to read that? It's got what's-her-face on the cover. Man, is she gorgeous. And there's 10 reasons why to dump your girlfriend.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So you can get rid of that blow-up doll you've had. All I'm saying is this. Forget about it. Now you bum me out. I don't even want to go into it now.
No, go ahead.
No, I don't even want to finish it now. It's just my little update in the broadcasting business. So I'll move on now to all the giggles. Our number is 1-800...
No, please, continue.
Shut up and read your FHM. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 3rd Street Promenade right out here in alleyway in Santa Monica, California for tonight's Slap Fight of the Titans. This is Don Dunphy along with the former heavyweight champion of the world, George Foreman, here, and a great crowd expected for tonight's Slap Fight of the Titans. A 15-round championship bout scheduled for 15 rounds between Tom Arnold and a wind-up Betsy Wetsy doll. Now, George, how do you look at this fight?
Well, I'll tell you right now, how do I look at it? I'm going to look at it from right up here. I don't want to get down there, all right? I don't want to get that Betsy Wetsy wetting on me, you know. But I'll tell you that I think it's going to be a good fight. I'm going to be up here checking it out and see how Tom Arnold does against the wind-up Betsy Wetsy doll.
All right, we got an interview now. Let's go down to Billy McGinley. Billy is down there with the Betsy Wetsy wind-up doll. Billy?
Betsy, you have trained very hard for this fight. How do you see it going? All right, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with that, Billy.
Yeah, Tom, she's ready to go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Although I would say that that's not a good strategy for the first round.
Well, okay.
Now that's Billy Arnold, or Billy Maxwell, I forget his name.
Tom Arnold's fighting. That was Billy Maxwell.
All right. And let's go to our ring announcer, John Johnson.
Let's fight! Scheduled for 15 rounds, Slap Fight of the Titans! In this corner, weighing in at 800 pounds, the very unfunny Tom Arnold!
Tom Arnold taking his bow down there. Trying to make a joke out of the whole thing, acting stupid, almost as if he's still doing speed. Very unfunny. And he is bouncing around the ring. And now here comes the challenger, a wind-up Betsy Wetsy doll being brought in a shopping cart.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, weighing in at a pound made out of plastic.
Excuse me.
Betsy Wetsy! Wetsy! Wetsy!
And there's Betsy Wetsy now bouncing around the ring.
This is going to be a good fight. I'd like to see if Betsy Wetsy can stay away from Tom Arnold because he is so hyper and acting like he's still doing smack and coke and everything. He might be so hyper, going to get in a left hand. Betsy Wetsy going to have to walk away, wet when she needs to, make it all slippery and like that there smear.
The bell for the first round as they get into the ring there. Tom Arnold, now he's out there slapping Betsy Wetsy. He's getting there. Betsy Wetsy getting in. Betsy Wetsy getting in a couple of steps. And there's a big right hand there by Betsy Wetsy. Arnold is staggered. Betsy Wetsy wetting herself now. Arnold getting all jittery and shaky, trying to come off really funny, not really saying anything, not coming up with any punchline, just acting herky and jerky and neurotic. And Betsy Wetsy gets another slap. And that's the end of the round. George Foreman, what I saw in that first round there was Tom Arnold acting as if, as you were saying, he still does drugs, being very hyper and nervous, but not saying anything funny.
Well, absolutely. That's the strategy. That's something that Tom has been trying to employ for a long time, and that is to just sort of giggle at himself and make herky-jerky motion as if he's still doing some kind of ambar barbiturate kind of thing like that. So we will have to see how it works out.
Let's go into the corner now, and we're going to be listening to the corner man for Betsy Wetsy talking to her. And you got to stay away. You got to stick and move. Stick and move. Now, don't give me that all bull crap. Stick him and then move. Stick him and then move. Stick him and then move. All right, baby? You got it, baby? All right, baby. Let's go. That's a very interesting look into the corner there of Betsy Wetsy as her corner man, Joey Judge, there was telling her what she needs to do here. And as the bell for the second round is Tom Arnold and Betsy Wetsy go into the ring. Betsy Wetsy, there's a big right hand. You can hear Tom Arnold giggling at himself. And you can hear Arnold there going crazy out there. Listen to that. Oh, the crowd is going nuts. Betsy Wetsy is staggered. Betsy Wetsy staggered by her right hand. How about that, George Foreman?
Well, Betsy Wetsy got staggered on that, and no doubt about that.
Betsy Wetsy was staggered by a big slap right across the plastic kisser by Tom Arnold, and then he retreated and sat back on the couch with his fly open and thought it was funny. All right, let's get into the next round here.
I'd like to see here in this next round whether Tom Arnold can keep it going, not really being very funny, not really saying anything funny, but just sort of acting neurotic and having people think he's funny.
Let's see if it works. There's another right hand. And a left. And a right. Out. And another right hand. And a left. And Vince Vincey is knocked down by Tom Arnold. There's a big, big knockdown. And I think it's a TKO.
Yeah, I think he got him, man. He bored her to death.
Let's go down to a ring announcer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner by technical knockout in the fourth round, boring his opponent to death with his pseudo-humor and sometimes funny neurotic behavior, Tom Arnold!
All right, we're going to send George Foreman down there now. George Foreman is down there, and he'll be talking to our winner, Tom Arnold, who in the fourth round here just bored Betsy Wetsy to tears. Let's go down there right now.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, champ.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, champ, how you doing? Hey, champ, George Foreman. Hey, listen, Tom. You stopped being funny a long time ago when you stopped doing drugs. Has it hurt you fighting?
No, no, no. I just pretend like I still do drugs. I think really nervous and really neurotic. I'm really talking really fast and sweating and really stuff like that.
Yeah, when I see you on that show, you look like you're fighting for your job every day. Is it true?
Yeah, I'm pretty much fighting for my job every day because I'm really not all that funny. I don't have a host of job. But, you know, there's a whole lot of people scratching my back and I scratch theirs.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Tom. Really good fight. Way to hold on to your career for another 6 months.
All right, thanks a lot.
There's Tom Arnold. Thank you, champ. And, of course, we will go down to Betsy Wetsy's camp as Betsy Wetsy is knocked out in a technical knockout here in the fourth round of this slap fight. And we'll be down with George Foreman just over there from Betsy Wetsy's corner. Why do I speak as if I'm a quasi-Englishman? Why do all fight announcers speak like this? It's so we can enunciate, and you can hear us over the radio very clearly. Say, friends, remember Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer for all your driving needs. All right, sit down to George Foreman, who is in the corner of Betsy Wetsy, and let's talk with George Foreman. George?
Yeah, thanks very much, Don. Say, Betsy Wetsy, tough, tough fight. Now, at what time... What time do you think he... Well, thank you very much. I like the tie, too. What time do you think Tom had you? Right. As soon as he started acting all gibbery and all kind of neurotic and everything like that, were you aware he had stopped doing cocaine before this fight? You were not aware of that. All right. So, in other words, you came into this fight and thinking he was still an active drug user and you didn't know he cleaned up. Well, why was that? Oh, because he still acts like a jackass. All right, I understand that. Well, thank you so much. Say, what do you think of that chick on Best Damn Sports Show? She's hot. What do you think of her ass? What do you think of her ass? All right. Back up to you, Don.
Thanks a lot, man.
What do you think?
All right, thank you very much, George Foreman, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Another slap fight of the Titans here from the 3rd Street Promenade as Tom Arnold, in a technical BO, that's technical boring knockout, of Betsy Wetsy in the fourth round here of the slap fight of the Titans. This is Don Duffy speaking for George Foreman. Thanks for joining us.
Slap fight of the Titans, the Titan Sports presentation.
Like that. That was a good fight. That was a good fight. It was one of the better fights I've heard on the slap fight, because what Arnold did basically is he fooled Betsy Wetsy into thinking he's still actively smoking crack. And in point of fact, of course, he's cleaned up, but he acts nervous and neurotic, and so you think he's still sort of a borderline dangerous drug user. So that's out of sight. Thank you. All right, 1-800-449-8686, world-famous Phil Henry Show coming up, Lawn Jockey Anonymous, and we'll also have a marital... I don't know why I want to say it that way, bud, but I do.
Yeah, you get your mouth fit.
Marital Bliss segment, and we'll do a little remote thing. We also have some Quebec talk radio coming up for you. Now, just one more thing on broadcasting. I know it's boring for you, bud, but it's... You know, you really ought to learn about this stuff, man, since you're in the radio game. Howard Stern today handed out free subscriptions to Sirius, the satellite radio service. In related news, the new CEO of Sirius is Mel Karmazin. Now, Mel Karmazin's the guy that basically built CBS to what it is today, Viacom Infinity Radio. Stern's out there in New York handing out subscriptions. That means these are one-year subscriptions. That means the subscription is going to be up in 1 year. And in 1 year, that's when he is scheduled to go on the air on Sirius. Now, do you realize the brilliance of that? Just as their subscriptions are about to run out, people will then re-up. So you've got yourself 2 years worth of subscription money. So commercial radio continues to stand still, whistling in the graveyard, while Sirius, XM, and other related enterprises circumvent the Federal Communications Commission that has basically paralyzed their business. And, you know, they stand to make themselves a nice, tight little piece of money. They're also going to attract a lot of people who are tired of working so very, very hard in this medium only to be, you know, called on the carpet in front of some executive because you used the word booger when you should have said something like nose dropping or whatever their problem is. I mean, you just, after a while, you want to work with adults. You want to work with grown-ups, and you don't want to have to deal with that. So this is really interesting. And as he had thousands of people out there in Times Square, it was on Fifth Avenue, someplace up Fifth Avenue, fans of XM were also out there. So both of the satellite services giving away these subscriptions to programming that is going to be aired on Sirius. Meanwhile, those of us here in the commercial world, and I've been, look at, it's not like I don't like what I love the company I work for, and I like what I do for a living, and I have been trying to talk to these people, for both on the air and off the air, for years, that we're going to strangle on our own horse manure if we continue to stand still, holding a diaper to ourselves and hoping the FCC just doesn't, you know, just kind of doesn't see us. Like the big, you know, Big Brother. You remember in Lord of the Rings, the Big Eye? And when the Big Eye swept across Frodo, it was like he got paralyzed. That's where we are in radio. The Big Eye is the FCC, and we're just hoping the Eye doesn't see us. As opposed to going up there and tossing the ring into the pit.
Oh, I get it. And then the FCC comes crashing down on it, kind of like the Eye did.
Exactly, bud. The FCC is the Big Eye,
and you're Frodo.
And I'm Frodo, yes. 1-800-449-8686, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I get it.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
And now, Jeff Dowder's Hypothetical America. With a professor of mechanical physics from Caltech University, Jeff Dowder.
And let's bring Jeff Dowder on right now here on the Phil Hendry Show. And Dr. Dowder, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Today on Hypothetical America, Dr. Dowder, you're going to investigate what America would be like if there was, I'm just reading your email, if there was not no Hawaii. Is that right?
That is correct. What if there was no Hawaii? Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Dowder, and welcome to Hypothetical America. This is a segment of the Phil Hendry Show where we investigate what America would be like. Were we missing something that we're very, like, familiar with and everything like that? Today, I'm going to talk about what if there's not any Hawaii around? What would it be like? Well, the first thing that you probably would say is, well, there wouldn't have been the Brady Bunch episode where Mike and Carol took Alice and the kids to Hawaii. And why is that? Because there's no Hawaii, they wouldn't have flown there. I mean, what are they going to land on? They would land on water because there wouldn't be no Hawaii. Also, they would not have met Vincent Price. And
I don't think you need to get into explaining why. I mean,
well, it's for Hypothetical America.
Well, I understand why they wouldn't go to Hawaii. If it wasn't there, they wouldn't fly there.
Yes, that's right. But if you'll allow me to, now I got to start all over again. Did you interrupt me?
Well, wait a minute, man.
Let's just butt out, man. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Dowder. Welcome to Hypothetical America. What would America be like if there wasn't any Hawaii? Number one, there wouldn't be no Brady Bunch episode.
where Mike and Carol took Alice and the kids to Hawaii. Remember that? Remember that? And Vincent Price was there, and he was like some, I don't know, some dude who was living in the jungle, and they thought he was, like, he thought the kids were going to steal his stuff or something. And that was really a very cool episode, and it reminds all of us of our childhoods and stuff. And so there wouldn't be no Brady Bunch episode. Number two, our teeth wouldn't be rotting out of our skull because all the sugar from the S&M company. Now the
what do you mean the S&M company? What is that?
That's a sugar company.
You mean the C&H company?
C&H stands for what?
California and Hawaii. What do you think S&M stands for?
Sugar cane. What?
Just...
You know, Mr. Henry, if I could just...
Yeah.
Please don't interrupt me. You know, I'm...
Okay, man, but S&M, what do you mean sugar cane, dude?
All right, I misspoke.
Oh, my God.
Just, you know, the editorial comments. Hello, everybody, this is...
Oh, man.
Jeff Downer, and this is Hypothetical America. What if there wasn't any Hawaii? There would be no coconuts. And so, if there wasn't no coconuts, you wouldn't be able to compare your friend's head to something when he gets his hair cut. Now then.
What do you mean you wouldn't be able to compare your friend's head to something when he gets his hair cut? And
what has it got to do with you, man? If I, see, this is me and my hypothetical America.
If there wasn't any coconuts.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be anything to compare your friend's head to.
Yes. Also, if there was no Hawaii, there'd be no flowered necklaces. And probably as a result of that, gayism and gayness would be unknown today in America because flowered necklaces and that stuff made guys go gay. The other...
All right, I've got to turn this off. And
what are you doing?
What am I doing?
Yeah, is Bud Dickman there, please? Is Bud Dickman there?
I'm right here.
Mr. Henry is interrupted.
Well, wait a minute. I can't have this. Hold on.
Dave is on the phone.
What are you doing?
This guy is on the air right now doing...
This was a segment approved by me and approved by you. Now get it on the air.
If there weren't any flowered necklaces, there'd be no gayism because guys wouldn't go gay.
Just get it on the air. Yeah, get me on the air. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeff Dower with,
Hypothetical America.
Hypothetical America. Thank you very much, Phil. If we didn't have Hawaii, just think of how America would be different. The big kahuna would have a whole other meaning. You know, it might have to do with, hey, you know what, I better go to the bathroom and wipe my big kahuna because...
All right, I don't care whether David wants it on the air or not.
I don't care. I don't want... Are you going to take me off the...
I'm taking you off the air.
You better put him back on. I'm going to call David.
This is Jeff Downer. If Hawaii didn't exist, there wouldn't be no volcanoes in America except the one up north. Okay? You know, the one that's Mount St. Helens, but other than that, there would be no volcanoes. Also, there would not have been an attack on Pearl Harbor, because they'd just be bombing water. Now, the other...
What do you mean they'd just be bombing water, man? Are you trying to tell me that if there wasn't a Hawaii... I thought you meant that if there wasn't...
If there was no Hawaii.
If there's no Hawaii, they'd be bombing water.
Yeah. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor would be stupid.
I thought you meant if we didn't own Hawaii.
Yeah, if we didn't own Hawaii, the Japanese would be bombing water. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, if there was no Hawaii, I can rest assured with all of you, we wouldn't have not no Samoans. I'm Jeff Dower, and this has been Hypothetical America.
If there wasn't a Hawaii, there wouldn't be any Samoans. And if there wasn't a Hawaii, the Japanese would have bombed water. I gotta talk to David after the show.
Well, he's gonna be busy.
You know, I'm very much upset with this segment.
He's gonna be busy.
1-800-449-8686, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Later on in our program tonight, we'll have Quebec Talk Radio, whatever that is. Possible new mad cow disease found. Hi, everybody. This is Phil Hendry with another trip into the news and one more reason to hate Canada. That's right. Another incident of mad cow disease may have occurred. And if it has, it's one more piece of rotten, fetid, foul meat sent to us by those Canadians. Did you hear about the thing today? Some member of the Canadian Parliament was photographed stepping on a George Bush doll. Now, she has every right in the world to do that. This is the same woman that called us all a bunch of idiots, says that Bush is a piece of crap, America's a big festering turd, and so on and so forth, right? I mean, for the longest time, I used to ask my parents, why did you leave Canada? Now I finally figured it out. They didn't want to stay up there any longer than they had to. She's this woman, I forgot, Carolyn Parrish, she steps on a Bush doll. I mean, gee, let's be grown up, huh? What? Wow. I'm telling you, right, we're getting to a point, and I don't want to scare anybody listening north of the border, we may have to invade. We may have to invade. We may have to invade Canada, go up there, clamp down on martial law. I mean, how tough is it going to be to control 20 million people, half of them alcoholics? It's not going to be like, it ain't going to be like Iraq, where there's insurgency everywhere. The Canadians can't get it together to get insurgent over, they couldn't get it together to get insurgent over a lack of toilet paper. The only thing they fight about are hockey games. Keep the hockey pumping into their houses, and they got a big, stupid look on their face. Other than that, man, we could go up there, post soldiers on every corner, and they just be all going, hey, nice day, you know, giving us the big toothy smile. Stepping on a George Bush doll, that's grounds for invasion. And I say we do it, and we do it quickly, and we hit them with everything we've got. Abrams tanks, 1st Marine Division, and then followed up with a very quick tactical nuclear strike. And I'd say within 3 days, we've wasted the whole place. All that forest up north, flat. That's what I want to see. I won't rest until every inch of Canadian forest is black, immolated, and completely flat to the ground. Thank you. I asked my mom, I said, why don't you move back to Canada? She looks at me like I came from the planet Mars. Honest to God. See, after my old man got out of the Army, he was in the Canadian Army, he came to America. And I said to him once, I said, why did you come to America, Dad? He says, because after World War II, that's where it was at. That's what he said to me. He says, America was where it was at. That was the only place to live. He said, I knew a lot of guys in the Army. They all wanted to come to the States, and they did. A lot of these guys moved south, some of them down to Florida, some of them down to, you know, California, some of them wherever. He said all we knew was that when the World War II ended, America was the place to be. So he packed up his family, and he moved to Beverly. Santa Monica, actually, is where they moved. And they came south, right? And as soon as he got here, within weeks, he applied for his American citizenship. And so did my mother. And within 5 years, they got their American citizenship. They became Americans. My old man bought a big American Eagle, and they became Americans. But they wanted nothing to do with Canada any longer. They couldn't. That's how much allegiance they had to that place. They couldn't wait to become Americans. They grew up in Canada. They went to school in Canada. My old man fought in the Canadian Armed Forces. They did about as much as you can for a country. I mean, when a guy joins the Army and goes to war, and yet when it was all said and done, they couldn't wait to get out of there. They got into their 1948 Ford, the one that old bullet-nosed Ford, I don't know if you ever saw it, put on the chino pants, the big Panama hat, lit up a cigar, and headed south, baby, and they ain't looked back. Well, my old man's dead now, but I imagine even now he's not looking back. We buried him face down. Now then.
You did?
I'm kidding.
I don't understand.
He's not looking back because we buried him face down.
Oh.
We didn't bury him face down. I'm just joking.
Oh.
You know what? I'm beginning to think Tom Arnold is funny just because you don't think he is. 1-800-449-8686.
Oh.
Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
In a moment, we'll be visiting Lawn Jockeys Anonymous. But first, Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association joined us last night to talk about a photo shoot upcoming. Western Estates will be featured in Patio Magazine. But while the photographers are there from the magazine, she has asked that all elderly people, senior relatives who may be visiting for Thanksgiving, stay away. She doesn't want old people being photographed, and she's said so to the homeowners.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
I think that this woman mm-hmm. is totally insensitive, mm-hmm. being totally insensitive mm-hmm. to your neighbors. Mm-hmm. I think that your family values are none, mm-hmm. if at all. I mean, you appall me. And I'm sure you had to schedule this shoot around other schedules, like maybe trash pickup, because I know you wouldn't want a trash can in the picture. Why couldn't you schedule it another time?
Well, there is only trash pickup on Thanksgiving.
And
that's
the other thing about God forgiving you or whatever.
I don't think God would ever
forgive
me.
First of all, it's God first, then family. Okay, and that is a day, you know, Thanksgiving is a time for families to get together. And, you know, these people calling you saying you go, I don't believe that for one minute. I bet your neighbors hate your guts, you know, and think that you, you know.
I don't know.
And I bet, you know what, I bet your husband don't like you either because the way you talk to him and playing your little blowhorn every 30 seconds. I mean, this is stupid. I live, and by the way, I live in Tennessee, which is right next to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that in your perception, in your little mind, I'm below you. But I live in a gated community with a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you,
well,
my whole family.
Do
my
you allow
grandfather, great-grandfather, all of them will be here.
You know, you've said an awful lot of very personal things, Kimberly, but I'm going to pray for you.
No, I don't need your prayers, honey.
I want you to know that I...
Could we not have that horn?
Phil, we are testing it out. I'm awfully sorry. First of all, Kimberly, God would never forgive...
Well, don't bring up God. I think Kimberly's got a good point there. Just say what it is you're trying to affect by keeping the senior citizens out.
Well, I don't know where to begin. I don't know if this woman understands what I'm talking about.
I understand completely
you
what you're talking about, and I
all
think
right.
it's asinine.
How many square feet is your home?
My home?
Mm-hmm.
It's 4,700 square feet.
Not big enough.
Not big enough.
No,
well,
it's
you
not
know
big
what?
Enough for our community.
When you only have two kids, it's plenty big.
Can we?
I mean, I have somebody that has to come in 3 days a week to clean it. It's big enough.
Yeah, she's on the air right now.
Can I ask you a question? You have a gate around it?
Yes.
And there are guards?
Yes. And believe me, my guards wouldn't be standing outside my house right now blowing blow horns. Never.
You're doing that so that we can alert the senior citizens
not
to stay out.
Not Thanksgiving yet.
We're testing the horn.
You're testing the horn every 30 seconds while you're trying to talk on the...
I'm not doing it, our security is.
No, and that's your husband doing it.
4,400 square feet, is that right?
4,700.
Does that count the barn?
Isn't
we
that
don't
funny.
Have a barn.
Mm-hmm.
We have a pool house that doesn't count that.
I bet you think I did that on purpose.
I think you got some immature person in the background doing it. You know, I mean,
I would like to know that, too. Is your husband doing that for the point of this discussion, Ms. Dooley?
Stephen is not involved in it, Phil. That's Richard Rodriguez and David Amalia are doing it with our security.
Stephen's probably hiding in the closet.
You know, you've made an awful lot of personal comments, which proves that you really don't have an intellect to argue. All you can do is attack. And so I'll simply say...
Well, you were the one that was talking about the lady from North Carolina and the barn space and all that other stuff.
Well, are you going to argue for the caller? You know what? Just for that. There. How do you like that?
And how old are you?
I'm 37.
Quit acting your shoe size.
What?
I said quit acting your shoe size. I mean...
My breast size? What?
No, your shoe size.
Turn that off!
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold!
So, that's when we, you know, change things again.
Uh-huh. Could you just take a little bit off the back, too?
Alrighty. Not too many people come in a barbershop these days, you know?
Well, I just thought it'd really be nice to change of pace from all those hairstyling places.
Yeah. You know, barbershop is a great American institution. And, I remember when men used to come in here, we'd sit around and talk about things, you know.
Yeah, that's what people say about barbershops.
Oh, yeah. You want the sideburns, too?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, we'd talk about all kinds of things. Things that are American, things that are very... community-oriented, that kind of thing. People just getting it off the chest. I'm sure you understand.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, can't do that anymore, though, can you? No, can't do that. Guy could come in here and sit down, pick up a magazine. We'll talk about white slaving if you want, or kiddie porn, that kind of thing. Nobody ever paid him no mind. Nowadays, the real big deal. Everybody make a big deal out of it.
Kiddie porn?
Yeah, can't really make a big deal out of it now. Back then, a man could come in, sit down, talk about, making love to a German shepherd if you want, or some of the donkey shows down in Tijuana. Just regular things now, of course. It's all verboten now.
Donkey shows?
Yeah. Okay, you want some of that smelly water on your neck?
No, I'm all done.
Yeah. Yeah, the old barbershop used to be a great place to come. You could comment on how a man looked in his slacks, the way a man walked, shape of his ass, that kind of...
Okay, I have to go now.
I ain't done yet, son. I'm not done yet. But, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Let me get some of this smelly water for you, because you're... Well, I tell you what. You're the kind of man I think look good in smelly water. Now,
could I get out of the chair now?
I'm sorry, I've got the restraining strap on you now, don't I? Look like you can't go no place. Want to see some pictures?
No.
Okay.
The Old Barbershop. Next week on CBS.
Cool. Are we going to hear another episode of that? I like that one. Also, many thanks to Bobby Dooley and her disgusting ways. Phil Henry Show will be back in a few minutes. We'll be out at Highland and Hollywood Boulevard. See what's going on out there on a Thursday night in America. Also, Quebec Talk Radio. All ahead on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
All right, we're out on Hollywood and Highland right now, and for those of you listening to us around the country this evening, we are broadcasting from what is the new tourist mecca of Southern California, I suppose. It's the Hollywood and Highland, and Chris, you might tell me back at the studio, what do they call this again?
It's Hollywood and Highland.
Hollywood and Highland, and people come here, and I see a rush of folks. And how are you, sir?
Good.
And I'm Phil Henry. I do a radio show.
I know. You know. Wanted to ask you if you'd step into the van for a minute.
I'm sorry? Say that again?
Would you step into the van for a minute?
Into that van?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to get... I don't want to get in it. What the hell are you guys doing? Is your microphone?
Yeah, what are you guys doing? I'm on the air right now.
I know you're on the air.
What's it about?
You've been saying stuff about Scientology?
What?
Have you been saying stuff about Scientology?
I ain't said nothing about Scientology.
You've been talking about Scientology, haven't you?
Everything you guys are saying is on the air right now, okay?
We are recruiting people of Scientology, and you...
You guys... Hang right here. Where are you guys taking me?
Now, Mr. Henry, my name is Bill Simon. I am a recruiter for the Scientology Institute here in Hollywood, California. You have been abducted. And
you realize you're speaking on a live microphone right now, don't you?
Yes, I understand I'm speaking on a live microphone, and I want all of your listeners to know that we have abducted you because you've been talking smack about Scientology, and it's going to end. We are working very hard on the streets of Hollywood to recruit people for Scientology, people who come here from other parts of the country and the world, idiots, if you will, if you want to call them imbeciles, who are easily persuaded into this kind of thinking. Hang a left up here, Bill.
What?
Hang a left up here. That's it. Now, you will talk. Stop. Slow down. I don't want to attract any police.
You guys are going to be in big trouble.
Shut up. Now, you've been on the air talking crap, talking garbage about Scientology, and I want it to end.
Sir, I have not said...
Shut up. When I want a word out of you, I'll ask you for it. All right, hang a left up here, Eddie.
Where are you guys taking me? This is kidnapping. It's a federal offense.
Really? Hey, do you guys know that kidnapping was a federal offense? Really? We're taking you to a safe house in Long Beach. And from there, you will announce to the world that Scientology
is the preferred faith of your family, go right.
I'm getting carsick. Shut up.
Shut up. Scientology, go left. Now hang a right.
Hang a right, Billy.
Where are you guys going? I don't know. We're lost.
Somebody get the Thomas Brothers guide, will you?
You'll stop talking crap about Scientology now. And I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that if you'll do that for us, there are a great many perks in it. I have to tell you at this time, no less a personage than Mr. John Travolta has ordered your abduction.
John Travolta, huh? Well, he's in big trouble.
John Travolta is in big trouble. Mr. Travolta is... I said Mr. Travolta, I didn't go right. Mr. Travolta is one of the number one practitioners of Scientology. You and all of your little minions and all of your big, fat, hot air talk shows will not keep us from spreading the word of Scientology.
Look, can I say something?
Go ahead. I don't care about science. Let me have the microphone. Why?
Because we're on the air right now.
Oh, yes, sir.
I don't care about Scientology. You guys can do whatever you want. You guys can broadcast. I don't care. Do I?
You have nothing against Scientology.
No, man. I got nothing against Scientology.
Don't you do a talk show?
Yeah, I do a talk show, man. I don't talk about Scientology. It's fine with me. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. Going in and getting your head cleared out and all that crap. I don't care.
Well, and whose show are we listening to, Bobby?
It's probably...
No, shut up, Mr. Henry. Bobby, whose show are we listening to?
Thought it was the Henry Show.
Well, he says he doesn't talk smack about Scientology. We got the wrong guy? Go left. Do we have the wrong guy?
I don't know. I heard a lot of the Henry Show. It's some broad.
Some broad? Who is it?
Probably...
Watch where you're going, you idiot!
I got an arm, Mr. Henry.
Where'd you come from?
I just thought I'd hop in. I rammed them with a car what I stole.
Get me back to the studio, you idiot.
Right away. Let me just hang a right.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Coming up, a visit with our neighbors up north, speaking of Canadians, and Quebec Talk Radio in just moments. It's Phil Henry Show, our number 1-800-449-8686. And news from the Middle East in Iraq, where American soldiers, United States Marines, and elements of the Army continue to kick some serious ass in Fallujah and elsewhere. And I would like to just take this moment. I don't know how often it's said during the day. I'm sure it's said by a lot of people. And I'd like to acknowledge what I consider to be their outstanding contribution to our country, to our world. I think these guys, these men and women over there, are the best people we've got. I've said it before. You want an example of great Americans? They're over there. And when I say I support the troops, I support what they're doing, which is killing tons of insurgents, tons of al-Qaeda. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Henry, and you may think I'm a far-right, wacko, right-wing host. I'm not, but I'm sure you're going to want to go down that road. Some of you, anyway. Yeah, they're over there, and they are putting some serious hurt on some of the worst scum the world has ever seen. Without question. And let me tell you why we're going to win. Can I give you just this just impression? Because I hear everybody without any historical context. I constantly see it over and over again. Yeah, this is just like Vietnam. No, it isn't, brain surgeon, and let me tell you why. Vietnam, for those of you who don't know, was a civil war that America inserted itself into wrongly. By the way, as I've mentioned before, we took that mess over from guess who? The French. Something they couldn't handle, so we figured we could, and we inserted ourselves in the middle of a civil war. Vietnamese fighting Vietnamese. Now, I know many of you understand what I'm about to say. There are some people who don't, and here's what those people don't get. What's going on in Iraq right now is not an Iraqi popular rebellion. It is not an Iraqi popular rebellion. It is an insurgency created by foreigners who have infiltrated that country. Why? How do I know that? Ask the Iraqi people. Ask the people of Fallujah, who refer to the guys that have been patrolling their streets in Nissan trucks with masks over their heads as the foreigners. Watch out. The foreigners are out there, and they're looking for Americans. The foreigners. Do you understand? The Iraqis are calling. This isn't some large coalition of Muslims. These are the Iraqi people who have been, who've had the boot of Saddam Hussein on their neck for 30 years, and now as they sort of try to stick their heads out of the door and get a little bit of fresh air, along come these insurgents to put more fear into them. These guys are from Saudi Arabia, Iran, Syria, Chechnya. They are as foreign to that country as perhaps American soldiers are. There's only one big difference. The Americans are there to try to establish order. The foreign fighters, the insurgents, are there to try to keep this, what they call an infidel institution of democracy, from spawning there. What they want is an Islamic theocracy. They want to have bags on women, hands chopped off, tongues pulled out of heads, guys getting their hands chopped off, dudes with big long beards, and towels on their heads. That's what they want. It may sound like heaven to them, but unfortunately we saw the result of that kind of thing in Afghanistan. Getting your tongue pulled out of your head and having a woman shot through the back of the head because she winked at some guy in a bookstore, this is not what is called civilization. This is what's called the Dark Ages. We left those 500 years ago. And in order for the rest of the world to be safe from these kinds of people, unfortunately or fortunately, we're going to have to drag the Middle East into the 21st century. They're not living there right now. They're still living somewhere between the, say, 15th century and 19th century. We're dragging them into the 21st century. Why is that? Because as long as they're living in the Dark Ages, they export their insanity to the rest of the world. They try to intimidate the rest of the world with their medieval concepts. Witness what just happened on the streets of what happened on the streets of Belgium yesterday. A Jewish man living in a neighborhood bordering a Muslim neighborhood was shot through the head. Why? Because he's Jewish. Who killed him? A Muslim. Am I painting all Muslims as terrorists? No. But I am saying that all the terrorists are Muslims. All Muslims are not terrorists, but all the terrorists are Muslims. So, unfortunately, the guys that were killing over there call themselves Muslims. Now, are they real practicing Muslims? I don't know. I wouldn't know what a real Muslim looked like, man, if he came up and kissed me straight on the lips and slipped me some tongue. But the fact is, they call themselves that. Understand, if you want to know why this isn't Vietnam, and people come up to you in the little coffee clutches that people are having in Starbucks all over the country and say, this is another quagmire just like Vietnam. You can say back to them, and you can tell them you heard it on a Phil Henry show, this is not Vietnam because it is not a popular uprising of Iraqis, nor is it a civil war between Iraqis. It is a foreign insurgency that has infiltrated this country, made up of Syrians, Chechnyans, Iranians, etc. And they've been there since the very early days of the war. In fact, most of them have been there since when Saddam was there. He helped train some of these people. He had Al-Ansar Islam in northern Iraq where he was training this Al-Qaeda offshoot. All these people with the, there's no link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam, they're talking straight out of their butts. Right out of their rear ends. And it sounds something like this. So what's going on right now? American troops are fighting alongside Iraqi troops. As they have success, and they are having success in Fallujah and Mosul and other places, they are going to get more confidence. And I'm talking about the Iraqi soldiers themselves. The Iraqis are living with the Marines. This is something that I heard Dale Dye talking about this on a show the other day. The Marines live with these other soldiers. They train with them. They eat the food they eat. And they become comrades. And as the Iraqis get more experience successfully in the field, they become more confident and they see themselves as a defender of their country. And they do see themselves as defenders of their country because they're fighting foreigners and Baathists who are socialist totalitarians. The Baathists. And the foreigners are Muslim theocrat fascists who believe in the same things Hitler believed in, exterminating Jews and doing it with a ruthlessness that borders and sometimes goes over the border into butchery and barbarianism. It's as simple as that. And anybody that argues anything else is engaging in typical American bourgeois Starbucks chit-chat. Period. You know, the United States shouldn't be in Iraq because this is another example of a spreading... There's a that website, antiwar.com. I sent them a letter today. Oh, my God, do they have time on their hands? They're talking about all the war crimes we're committing. First, it's 100,000 Iraqis that have been killed. And then when you ask them, okay, where's your proof of that? Then they say, well, it's more like 10,000. Where's your proof of that? Well, the news media. Oh, the news media. In other words, we're supposed to accept all kinds of minuscule, microscopic proof about Al-Qaeda and Saddam. We got to have proof of weapons of mass destruction. But when you guys start running around with this 100,000 Iraqis get killed, we just got to take your word for it. Is that it? These people are so wrong, they're so dead wrong, and what's tragic is they don't know how utterly wrong they are. They're as thick as the day is long, man.
How long is the day?
Oh, about 24. Will you shut up? How long's the day?
Well, you said it's long as the...
I know what I said. It's a figure of freaking speech. So as the Iraqi soldiers that are fighting with the Marines have success, they gain in confidence, and as they gain in confidence, they gain in a sense of solidarity with themselves, and they do see themselves as being successful in defending their countries, and they will continue to have success. And this is why we're going to win in Iraq, because we're not fighting in the midst of a civil war. We are fighting foreign insurgents who are trying to hold the Iraqi people down. And the tragedy of this war for some people is that they see America as the occupier. That's the utter intellectual tragedy. They cannot bring themselves to enter the 21st century and take a look at what it is we're dealing with, that these insurgents in Iraq, the same people who gunned down Mr. Van Gogh in Amsterdam, the same people that murdered the Jewish man in Belgium yesterday, the same people that blew up the train in Madrid, the same people who shipped a SUV from Texas and was fitting it with explosives when our Marines found it in Fallujah. Do you realize they found an SUV, an American-made SUV, in Fallujah with Texas plates being fitted as an explosive, some kind of an explosive suicide vehicle? In other words, there were Al-Qaeda in our country buying SUVs and shipping them over to Iraq. But yeah, George Bush hasn't kept us safe. You're right. And by the way, just a little word for John Ashcroft. Yeah, I know the guy's a real kind of nutcase religious dude. I know he's pro-life. I know there's a lot of things. But you know what? That guy kicked ass. He did a good job. And everybody's still running around saying what they want. Nobody's in a concentration camp. There aren't thousands and millions of Iraqis who are being holed up in some sort of, reclamation, or what do they call them? A reclamation center. That's where you put bottles. What, are we putting Iraqis in the recycling plants now? No, what do they call it in World War II with the Japanese? I don't know, but something like that. Everybody's still going to Christian churches, Muslim mosques, Jewish synagogues, going to porno, renting all the porn they want, looking at all the Playboy channel they want. Yeah, give it up, baby. We're not living in the Third Reich yet. Okay, Marcus, hello, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Could you just explain to me again or repeat what you said about how Iraq was nothing like Vietnam?
Vietnam was a civil war between Vietnamese. Iraq is an insurgency of foreign nationals who are infiltrating that country. We are not fighting against Iraqis. We're fighting against Chechens, Iranians, Syrians, Saudis, Jordanians, who are attempting to co-opt the power of that country.
And you don't think the Iraqi population has anything to do with that?
No.
So you're saying that the insurgency has nothing to do with Iraqi,
ask you a question,
right?
Or you ask me a question, and I'm going to answer it. I think there are elements of Iraqi Baathists, but it is not a popular uprising. No, absolutely not.
So when you have interviews of young soldiers saying that 17- and 18-year-old boys are gathering around in these Iraqi cities and who are fighting the American soldier, what do you say to that?
What do you say to the soldiers that I've talked to personally who say they're getting assistance from Iraqis?
Well, answer my question first.
No. You answer mine, man, because I don't believe you've even seen these interviews.
Well, I'm not talking from an interview, but I'm talking from a first-hand friend who's a Navy SEAL.
Really? Well, I'm talking from about five or six Marines I've talked to who said the Fallujah people were helping them find insurgents in their city.
Well, that may be, but my point is still valid.
All of this anecdotal stuff means nothing. You're not presenting an argument, and neither am I. I'm telling you First of all, I lived through the Vietnam period. I know what happened then, and I see the Iraq war today.
You deserve a medal. You deserve a medal.
No, I'm not earning a medal. It's just I have information that you don't. I just have information. I don't give a
crap. My dad was a Vietnam veteran.
I don't care what your dad is. My old man's a World War II veteran, okay? So he knows all about Nazis, and these guys now in Iraq are Nazis.
My dad knows all about gooks running around with freaking ponchos or whatever.
Look, kid, what's your evidence that this is an Iraqi popular uprising? Your evidence.
My point isn't that it's an Iraqi popular uprising. My point is how similar the similarities to it.
There is no similarity because of that. There is no similarity because of that. That's where it begins and ends. Vietnam was a Vietnamese war was between Vietnamese. This is not.
The reason why it was such a dysfunctional war was because the soldiers couldn't discern the difference between the enemy and a civilian. And
no,
those are the same complaints
wrong,
that Iraqi soldiers
wrong,
are giving Americans
wrong,
today.
Wrong. You're dead wrong.
You're telling me my dad's a liar?
I'm saying you're stupid and you haven't listened to your father right. How about that? You got
I'm
that? Okay.
Stupid.
Yeah, you're stupid and you haven't listened to what's your fault.
Well, maybe I should go listen to Fox News and take everything that Bill Hamilton.
And Marcus, maybe you ought to continue to do what you're doing, which is do nothing but sit on your thumb and misunderstand your father. Thanks for calling. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Je dois vous dire que le contre-biche international, Canada, mon siguiente, Jacques Bertrand, je suis dans ton télé, si je suis pas. Eh, souvent, je suis de terre, c'est sûr que comment il est français du Canada. Et ce contre je suis dans ton livre, son bras.
Il faut pas dire ça, c'est quoi là?
Justement, le contre-biche, je suis ventré terre froid, c'est bien. Good afternoon. Welcome to Jacques Beltre's show here on Canada Radio. And welcome. We're going to be discussing a number of issues relative to our country. And as you know, of course, Canadian law dictates that each program we broadcast here in Canada be not only in our native language of French here in Quebec, but also the English language. Je ne sais pas si c'est tout le temps. Quand je viens de la scène, c'est tout le temps. Luc est en train. So once you want to leave you but you do 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 want to leave. If you have erectile dysfunction problems, take it from me, Jacques Beltran. The very best product that you can possibly buy is something I have found on the internet. It works great for me. And it is called MAN. That's right, M-A-N, MAN. It's going to help you be all you can be for your woman. Ah, Lugo votre nu, merci à ta lanceur.
Quand vous bien.
Du grand temps?
Pour.
Qui?
Pour.
Lui.
Trois.
Du grand, c'est le temps. Et le retour du chien, pas?
Je suis dans le bien.
Je suis certain entre les deux?
Si vous avez le temps, je suis en train américain pour se rentrer, je suis entre les deux.
Welcome to the program, Joe, and could you give us your comments, please? In English.
Je demande si tu parles anglais.
See, yes, sir, I want you to say it in English, because law says that you must say it in English. Hang up on him. Jackass. If you call the program, it's got to be in English and French. Recent news has shown us that America continues its imperialist ways in Iraq and around the world, telling everyone what to do, pushing everybody around, and treating everyone like garbage. Here in Canada, the other day, I saw yet another movie made in America that I wanted to go see, Spider-Man 2. I find this to be an intrusion against my Canadian cultural nationalism to make me want to go see a movie because it's far better than anything that is produced here in Canada. I feel culturally raped, and I am so very sorry for that.
Yeah,
La culture, mon c'est fait au fin. This has been the Jacques Pelletier Show here on Radio Canada. Oh, thank you. Why don't you all dance, okay? We don't have the next show for another couple of minutes. Everyone, let's dance. Let's put our lock our arms and go in dance in a circle. Put your hands up. Wait a minute. Feel good. What? Put your hands up.
For what?
You did not do the entire show in French. You did some English, too much English, not enough French.
And who are you?
A Royal Canadian Mounted Police from Montreal.
Well, you can kiss my bat. No, you can. Stinking.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Tomorrow night, Clara Bingham, a Joyful Union Congregation middle school teacher, will join us, and we will have Clara just in moments to give us an update as to what she may be speaking with us about tomorrow night. And as you know, we love movies on our show. We talk about movies, I think, quite a bit. And if you go to our website, www.philhenryshow.com, you'll notice that I highlight a DVD of the week. It links you to Amazon, one of our website sponsors. And the DVD is something that we recommend that you watch. And we not only recommend the DVD, but we also give you Phil's best line of the movie. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. This week's highlighted DVD pick of the week is Dirty Harry. And Phil's best line of the movie is when Scorpio is talking to Dirty Harry. Scorpio's the killer. He says, "Okay, cop, left hand, let's see the gun." And then Harry pulls the gun out of his coat, and Scorpio says, "My, that's a big one." So that's our best line of the movie. Now, next week, we're going to highlight an older film, but really a great film, On the Waterfront. Everybody thinks the best line out of On the Waterfront is, "I could have been a contender, I could have been somebody instead of a bum, blah, blah, blah." But no, that's not it. It's the line uttered by Johnny Friendly, who says, "Quit breathing that clam, quit breathing that clam sauce all over me." And that's also the movie from which we got, "They're dusting off the hot seat for me." Because he, all the guys are holding guns, all of his crew, and he says, give me all the guns. They're dusting off the hot seat for me. Why are you guys packing these guns?" So, in any event, go to our website, www.philhenryshow.com. Check it out. We have all kinds of great stuff. Our audio archives, our DVD pick of the week. We have Bud's Babe of the Week. Let me see who you got up here, Bud. Oh, my God.
What?
Joan Rivers?
What? Are you kidding me? Now you're telling me she's not hot?
Every week with this Bud's Babe of the Week, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to kill me?
What are you talking about?
Last week it was Susan Powder. The week before that it was Rita Cosby. And the week before that, Teresa Heintz. And this week you got Joan Rivers.
You know something? Yeah, I really feel sorry for you. Let me tell you why, Phil.
Yeah, go ahead. Let me learn from you, Bud.
Yeah. You don't know anything about women and what make them hot.
All right, man. You know,
that's Bud's Babe of the Week. And when I say Joan Rivers is hot.
Do you dig her because she had all that plastic surgery?
What plastic surgery?
What plastic surgery? Friend, have you seen her before she looked like this?
She is gorgeous, and she's got a great body, too.
Anyway, Bud's Babe of the Week is Joan Rivers. I ain't saying she ain't pretty, but look, anybody can be pretty with about $15,000 worth of plastic shoved into their nose.
She wears gems and everything around her neck, and she has diamonds and everything.
Woo! Maybe you can be her boy toy, dude.
You're jealous.
Yeah! Anyway, we got Bud's Babe of the Week up there. And we also have the DVD of the Week. And the reason that I mention that is AFI, which is the American Film Institute, they have the top quotes of movies. Okay, the great lines. Here we go again with, "Why don't you come up and see me sometime?" Get out of here with these. Can't you guys mention movies that about great lines? We don't keep going back to the same one from 1938.
You guys ever watch any movies that are more recent than that?
The top film lines. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Huh? That's maybe in 1951 that was really, like, groundbreaking. That line sucks. First of all, it's not that the movie's bad. The movie's good. But get off the frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn already. It's not as revolutionary as it once was. The scene is pivotal in that he's telling her to get lost and that he's not buying into her bullcrap anymore. But the frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, it probably made everybody in 1938 faint. There were probably calls for censorship. I bet you anything in 38 when Gable said, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, they were calling for, I bet you they wanted to jail every actor, just like they're doing right now. What is going on with a society that would allow a word like that? What kind of jackass would... Mae West, why don't you come see me? She's doing Tom Hanks, Houston, we have a problem? Are you kidding? The American Film Institute says is one of its great lines for motion pictures, Tom Hanks in Apollo 13, Houston, we have a problem. Now, I hate to break the news to you guys, but that was actually what Jim Lovell said to Mission Control in 1970 when they had the explosion aboard Apollo 13. If you're trying to tell me that the film business should be credited with simply recording and restating what was said in real life, then I'm, you know, maybe I'm in the wrong business. I'd like to get into the movie business. You guys are not taking credit for history? Is this what you're doing in the movie? You guys are taking credit for something a guy said. Why don't you cats get a clue? What do these guys do at the AFI anyway? They teach guys how to make movies? They do good stuff. They have a student deal and everything. I'm not really, it's not driving me nuts. I just, personally, as a student of history, I would much rather see things accurately recorded as opposed to, it's the one problem that a lot of people have with Hollywood, which is that they co-opt history, they make it their own, they regurgitate it, and it becomes completely unrecognizable, but there's an entire generation that goes, wow, that really must be what happened. Why?
Because Ben Affleck was in the movie.
Oh, okay, yeah. And in Pearl Harbor, they were doing all kinds of upside down flying, and there was a dude there on the ground saying that plane over there is good to go. That was a phrase they used in 1941, good to go. Remember in Pearl Harbor when the did you see Team America? I love you more than Pearl Harbor sucked. Boy, what a great that was one of the great songs of that movie. I love you more than Pearl Harbor sucked. All right, moving along and beating up on people who make millions anyway. Show Me the Money from Jerry Maguire. The Star Wars, may the force be with you. The quotes range from the first full-sound feature film with Al Jolson's Wait a Minute, Wait a Minute, You Ain't Heard Nothing Yet, to creepy creature Gollum hissing My Precious in Lord of the Rings. That was also from the book. So if it's a great movie line, it's just simply, it was written in the book, let's say it again. I just dig movie lines that people don't remember, that are funny and cool. Like, my, that's a big one. And don't breathe that clam sauce all over me. And they're dusting off the hot seat for me. And what were some of the other ones? When we feature our DVDs, Bud, what did we have?
Yeah, one that had a week. I forget what it was.
Oh, yeah, Kelly's Heroes. Kelly's Heroes, Telly Savalas, great line for that movie where he says, you never stick your neck out for nobody unless you're some kind of a hero type. And I haven't seen any too many hero types around here lately.
What I got? Play it again, Sam.
That sucks.
What about,
Shut up. Play it again, Sam. Play with it again, Sam. In other news on the Phil Henry Show, fossil may be ancestor of humans and apes. Scientists in Spain announced Thursday they've unearthed the 13-million-year-old fossilized skeleton of an ape that is possibly a common ancestor of humans and great apes, including orangutans, bonobos, chimps, and gorillas. The find could add another branch to the human family tree and fill in a gap in our knowledge of hominoid evolution. It's very special, said Franz de Waal of the Yerkes Primate Center at Emory University in Atlanta. It's almost as if we will have to redraw the evolutionary tree if these discoveries keep coming out. So they keep finding different kinds of apes that go back millions of years, and they think that this one is related to us. So this is probably what we looked like, Bud, 13 million years ago, which was like a chimpanzee.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I wasn't quite sure. That's pretty interesting. We look like a chimp.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Some people still do.
That's true. Some people still look like chimps.
Certain race.
If you bring that, go get out of here.
What did I do?
Get out of here and take that racial sensitivity training.
I already did the jelly bean.
I want you to do the jelly beans again. Chris, make sure that he is taking that racial sensitivity. What a racist punk. Salvador, I'm going to take him off the show unless I can get further, if I can get complete and utter, absolute clear that he is not insensitive. Another guy said that his colleagues described the species, which they've named Pterodactyl, I can't even pronounce it, in the issue of journals. It's anyway, they're finding another ape-like guy who's running around out there, and he's related to us. They also found some campfire in South Carolina they said is 50,000 years old, and they found something else somewhere else. They're finding skulls, bones, all kinds of crap. You know, to me it's really cool, because here's what happens. Let me just kind of put this into context, if I could. Science is all about evidence, taking the evidence, looking at it, and putting it into some context, and then moving on. And if you get more evidence that clarifies something, then you put that into the theorem, if you will, and you put that into context, and you draw conclusions based upon the evidence. Here's the problem with people who call themselves creationists. They're not scientists. They're not even close to being scientists, and here's why. I'll explain. No matter what evidence you present to those people, they will always hold fast to their idea that evolution didn't exist, doesn't exist, and that it's all creationism. So by definition, they're not scientists. They're religionists. A scientist keeps his mind open to whatever evidence, any and all, that comes in. Any guy that says to you he's a scientist but he's a creationist is not. He's some guy who's got a religion and he's trying to cram his science into the religion, and so that he doesn't burn in hell, he decides he's going to be a creationist and that'll keep him good with God. But by the same token, he realizes he's not engaging in any science. He's looking at this static theory of God creating everything and we didn't come from apes, and he'll never change his opinion, no matter if you could put a bullet through his head, put a gun to his head, show him the actual film footage of a guy turning from an ape into a human. Suppose we could actually look at the film footage of a guy turning from an ape into a human. There's no proof you could bring to the guy. Look, right here, Bob.
I'm sorry, God created...
I know, let's say God did create anything, man, but it evolved.
No, God created man right the way it...
Look, here it is here. Here's a little skull. Now it's a slightly bigger skull. Bigger. And see, there's the human skull. See, all these little skulls go up to the human skull.
Doesn't prove a thing.
Well, what the hell proves your theory?
Because it's in the Bible.
Well, that don't make you a scientist.
Creationism.
And the other thing that's totally offensive is forcing this into the textbooks of our schools. It's wrong. Wrong. Wrong, man. Wrong, baby. I had to call my kid's school. I'm calling my kid's school. I said to a biology teacher, I said, let me, I just want to get, no offense, dude, I just want to get something straight. You're a biologist, you know far more than I do, but I just want to make sure that my kids are being taught science. He said, yes, Mr. Henry, we are. I said, that includes the theory of evolution, is that correct? Yes, sir, absolutely. Thank you. This guy's a creationist. I talked to him, he says, well, I'm a creationist. I said, I'm going to tell you something. Not that I'm a practicing Catholic, but my kids are all Catholic, my wife's a Catholic, and the Catholic Church teaches that evolution is consistent with the Bible. The Catholic Church teaches that evolution is the story of man, and it is consistent with the story of man. And he says to me, well, you didn't always believe that, did you? I said, well, it doesn't matter. The fact is they do now. Now, you may think that Bush is all about cramming the creationist theory into schools, but he ain't. I don't hear him calling for it, nor do I hear him calling for a combination of church and state. He just simply says he's a cat who's got a religion. The people that are trying to jam that stuff up our noses are these evangelists and Bible thumpers. You got to keep that stuff out of the public schools. It is not science. You are attempting to jam a religious theory into a science class. It is patently wrong, and I'm not going to support it as a taxpayer, and you can kiss it goodbye. Now, get your heads on straight. If you want to teach that stuff, do it in your private religious schools. It is not science. Creationism has never been science. It's a guy holding to one set of beliefs, regardless of what the scientific evidence presents. That's not science. That is religious opinion. Keep it the hell out of the school, and we can all go to heaven in a pea-green boat. Ain't that right, Bud? Bud?
I'm not talking to you on account of you think Joan Rivers is frightening.
Tomorrow night, Clara Bingham on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.